It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Time for the final hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Plenty going on today. Today has been a day of news stories, for sure. It's nice to have those, and even some action. And with that in mind, it is Chris Mason time here on the show. He joins us to talk a little bit of Predators, and it's nice to have a few things to talk about. Mace, first of all, happy Canada Day to you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much. Good day. Good day.
A good day indeed. And another reason it's a good day is there are actually some phase two workouts going on at Bridgestone Arena. Some Predator players together on the ice in the small groups.
Yeah, I mean, that's the step that, you know, I guess it's all day to day in this whole process and to get to that point, because, you know, everything up until this point was, quite frankly, it's been tentative. Kind of based on how everything is going health-wise for everybody and the whole, COVID situation. So the fact that everything is good enough to get the green light and get the guys back, I'm sure, as a former player, there's nothing more that you want to do than to get back on the ice and play the game you love. So it's awesome to see the teams back on the ice, and especially the boys in gold, that's for sure.
Yeah, and hoping to count down, and, you know, the way things are going, you know, you got to watch these carefully. You can't count your chickens without any question. But hopefully they can maneuver towards July 10th and then have really a first practice, a first real team workout in an official capacity since, I guess it would be March the 11th. I don't even know if they practiced. When we went from Montreal, they won that last game. Did they even practice the next day in Toronto? Probably not, right? So it's been since they played against the Canadiens that they've had really a group activity of any consequence.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right, Willie. And I think that morning they were supposed to have a pregame skate in Toronto, and that got put on hold because of the situation. NBA canceled the night before, and then everybody was put on hold there for the morning skate, and we're all in the hotel waiting around, and the rest was history. So it's good to see the progress, and I'm just going to stay hopeful that they can find the right cities and the right way to do this and protect the players and all the staff and everybody that's involved in it. So it's going to be it's really good that it's progressing, and I guess that's at this point that's all you can ask and go day to day. Hope they're, you know, I'm sure they're going to be monitoring the players and the training staff and the coaches and everybody that's part of that group. So it's a good sign for sure.
Another piece of news that came out this morning, it looks like Bob McKenzie was the one that put it out there for TSN, that barring any last-minute complications, it will be Edmonton and Toronto. So a pair of Canadian cities will be hosting. And I think what I read is that the West will go to Edmonton and the East will go to Toronto. So that would mean, barring any last-minute complications, which, as we know, there can be, that the Predators will face off against the Coyotes in Edmonton.
Yeah, and that's great. And, you know, I guess, obviously, with what, like we mentioned before, with this situation just being so fluid and obviously, they're trying to do the best to protect the players and put them in the best situation. And, you know, the Canadian cities have a ton of facilities, rinks, and different things like that that can be utilized for, I mean, you know, there's going to be 12 teams in the city for the first, couple weeks at least. So you got to find enough to get enough ice time and have a good setup where there's enough space for guys to get away from the rink and have those kind of activities set up for them. So that's exciting. And that's kind of where, I mean, I guess that last week they're kind of speculating that it was going to be Edmonton and Toronto. So it looks like that's where it's going to land, like you said, barring any setbacks. So again, it's good to know and for the guys to get that in their minds as well moving forward here. And I guess, the further we progress, the more we're going to know scheduling wise. Hopefully training camp opens up on time, like you said, and then we can just keep the train rolling.
We're talking to Chris Mason, Predators analyst, former goaltender. Now, before I get to my question, some business we got to take care of. Am I correct in saying yesterday is it Avery? Was her birthday?
Yep. Yeah, it was her birthday. She turned 14. Oh my God, that's hard to fathom. Yeah, but she turned 14. She was born here in Nashville in 2006. And I was actually just talking to Brooks Bratton about that yesterday. He was talking about free agent day because obviously today is the opening of in the normal world. It's the free agent day. So we're just talking about a story. And I remember when she was born, I was actually in the hospital. She was born the 30th, and I was talking to my agent and David Poyle and Paul Fenton and all that. And I ended up signing a contract I was with Nashville the years before, but I signed. I was almost going to be a free agent. And one of the best days or coolest days, a couple days in my life for sure, with her being born. But more importantly, signing an NHL contract. Avery was pretty cool, but the NHL contract was a little better. I'm kidding. I'm kidding, of course. It was a good combo. It was a great combo. I'm just kidding about that. Of course, it was the best day of my life when Avery was born.
Yeah.
But good couple days anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, happy birthday to her. So one thing that with these hub cities that is Willie brought up, it looks like the East will be in the East, the West will be in the West. But as a goalie, how much do you get used to just the idiosyncrasies of the ice in which you play? So, like, for instance, you know, at Bridgestone Arena, you're so used to it. You know how the puck is going to bounce off the dasher boards or how the ice is going to, you know, to react or whatever. You know those things. You get used to playing at that rink. So is there any type of advantage at all to, if it is Edmonton and Toronto, to the Oilers or to the Maple Leafs just because they know their rink better than others?
Well, I think I definitely think the home team's got an advantage because they're going to obviously be in their own dressing room. They're going to have all their own amenities and all that kind of stuff available to them. But, you know, I was just thinking about this too yesterday or the other day is that, and Willie would probably know better than I have, but I'm pretty darn sure that if I'm a goalie and I'm both Pekka and UC Saros, I'm pretty happy that it's in Edmonton because both of those guys have been lights out in that building against the Oilers. And you do have a comfort. There's certain buildings that for whatever reason, just like when you're playing against certain teams, but those buildings are a big part of it that when you go in there, you feel good about your game. You feel comfortable. You rely on past performances, and there's just a feeling there. And I think for our guys, for Juice and Pecks, I think they got to be pretty happy because both of guys are not just good. They've been lights out, and they've been excellent, and pretty much impossible to score on at times in that building. So I think that there's definitely advantages and disadvantages for certain teams to be in that situation.
Do you think that they are both looking at it, whether it's Pekka or UC that starts game one? They both have that same amount of hunger that I think is going to be dangerous and beneficial for the Predators to know that whenever their number is called, they're both going to be ready. And the Predators are going to need both of them throughout this run because of the compacted schedule. And we've talked time and time again about how this break has benefited Pekka, but just that they both have that sense of they know that they're going to be needed at some point.
Oh, 100%. There's going to be a goalie battle in every single training camp around the league. And, you know, obviously we know the situation at the end of the season. Juice was playing awesome, and he was getting the lion's share of the games, and he was going to be the guy going down the stretch. But we're talking about brand new start here. That's way too long for any of that to carry over. So I guarantee you Peck is going in there with the mindset that he wants to be the guy playing the first game, and so is Juice. These guys are both obviously very, very capable of carrying the mail when they're called upon, and this is a fresh start. I mean, this to me – honestly, this is the hardest decision that any of these coaches, that John Hines, the rest of the coaches that are in this, play-in and playoff, structured thing that's going to happen here with the NHL, that they're going to have to make. What goal are you going to start? You obviously have to put a little bit of stock into, who you're playing, prior performance, but really it's going to come down to who shows up and who's playing great at the start, who comes in and has a good camp, who looks good if they play exhibition games. It's going to be tough, and you don't have a lot of time to make that decision. And then what do? In game one, you do pick a guy, and the guy struggles in the first game. It's a best of five. Do you make that change right away, or do you risk the chance of you know, being down 2-0 because you decided to go back with the guy that you chose in game one. It's going to be a really, really tough decision. You know, John Hines and the Predators, you know, the Arizona Coyotes, for that matter, are pretty fortunate because they have two guys that are, you know, high-end goalies, number one goalies, if you will, in this league. So it's, but, you know, how do you pick one? You know, it's going to be a tough decision. And I think a lot of it's going to be based on how they play at training camp and in the exhibition game, if they do that.
We've talked about, you know, John Hines obviously didn't get a training camp. Now he's going to get one, albeit at a different time, but now he's going to get to take these guys through training camp. But we all agree that competition is a good thing. And the taxi squad or the Black Aces, however you want to refer to them, that are going to be here, how beneficial do you think that's going to be for those young, hungry guys that are coming from Milwaukee that were having such a tremendous season, had a chance to win the championship in their league? Now all of a sudden they don't. They're going to be able to push some of these veterans, and they won't necessarily play, but how beneficial do you think that that's going to be to have those guys there?
Well, I think for them it's going to be extremely beneficial. You know, I think the roster is pretty much set, but it definitely gives – John Hines some flexibility in making those decisions. And you know, it's going to be, like you said, that healthy competition. And that's part of it. There's always guys, you know, just hungry and young, and they want to get their opportunity and get their chance. And they keep fighting. You look at Rocco Grimaldi, you look at Jared Tenorti, you look at all these guys and, you know, the Predators history that have been given that chance and really done something special with it. And these guys are no different. It's an opportunity for them to make an impression on the coach that you don't know yet. Because like you said, John Hines hasn't had a training camp. He doesn't know any of these guys. It's a great opportunity for them, obviously, to get back on the ice, to get familiar with the guys on the team, the way the Nashville Predators do things, be a part of, you know, a playoff, hopefully a big playoff run, and be in that atmosphere at the highest level. And again, someone's always watching. And when you're here, in Nashville, with the Nashville Predators, you have the people watching you that matter most that are making those big decisions. And like I said, it gives John Hines the flexibility, you know, and injuries do happen. And maybe in this situation, I know in the lockout year, team to team, it differs, but, you know, injuries can pile up. And you said it earlier, there's going to be a condensed schedule. And hopefully they do have enough time from training camp to games. I know normal training camps, you know, you start training camp and you play a game 3 days later. So there's not a lot of time, but, you know, guys are skating all summer long. So it's going to be interesting, but you definitely have to have those reserves if you're going to go on a long run. There's no doubt.
Mace, one thing that happened since the last time we talked to you is the NHL had their draft lottery, and what a twist. LA gets the second pick, which isn't that much of a surprise, even though they move up a little bit, and they already have an outstanding group of prospects in the farm system, so they've got to be excited about that. Ottawa and Detroit have to be just cringing right now. Ottawa had two shots at it. They end up with picks 3 and 5, where combined they had a chance of at least a 1 in 4 chance of getting the first pick. Detroit, who had just a god-awful season, one of the worst, maybe the worst, in the salary cap era, end up with the 4th pick. But the real interesting part of it, as many of you know, was that a loser from this qualifying round will get the first pick. It had something like 0.03% of a chance of happening, but it did. And so that is a little bit of a twist that somebody, and it could be the Predators or the Coyotes, whoever loses that series, would have a 12.5% chance of getting the first pick. What a weird scenario.
It's a weird scenario. I don't like it at all, to be honest with you, just because I don't think it's fair. And I know that they put those, you know, the chances in so you don't get the teams, you know, throwing their season away, trying to guarantee the first pick and all that. But you got a potential franchise player at number one in Lafreniere. And I just don't think it's fair if somebody like Pittsburgh gets knocked out, or even Nashville. I mean, it'd be awesome for Nashville if they, it would suck that they lost out, but if they ended up getting the first pick, that'd be you know, a game changer for whoever does it. But it's not really fair, you know, for the teams like Ottawa and Detroit, who are obviously in rebuild situations that, you know, could really need that player and could turn their franchise around. I don't love that. I expect that maybe to be revisited. And I know they're working on the extension on the CBA. Who knows if that's changed in it or not, or if that's one of the things. But it's really too bad that, you know, a team that quite frankly, doesn't deserve to have the number one pick, is going to probably end up getting it. So I don't like it, and it's too bad for, really too bad for Ottawa and Detroit, even though, you know, you want to look out for your own organization, and it's, you know, it'd be if Nashville happened to lose and they got the pick, yeah, it'd be awesome. But I just don't think it's right that, you know, a team of that caliber is going to get that pick.
Well, they should have written in, at least for Pittsburgh, that they weren't allowed to do this because they already got it once. Remember, after the lockout, they got Sidney Crosby when everybody had the same chance. So can you imagine if they end up with the first pick out of this? That's just not – that would really be a disappointment.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the reaction around the league? They're not the most popular team outside of Pittsburgh anyway because, they're so great. It's part of it. You know, they've had a lot of success. But I cannot imagine the backlash if that happened.
No, it's not right. You know, and the Edmonton got it. They had, I think, four or whatever in the last however many years. But they had a bad – they were a terrible team for a lot of years. And they may end up making some bad picks, too, to be honest with you. But, you know, every year to year, it just depends what the draft class is like. And this year, there's a couple of no-brainers at the top. So, yeah, I don't like it. I think, you know, they tried to do the best they can by limiting – you know, the odds and the percentage of a team like that getting that pick, but it's I think they could restructure that a little bit better because I just don't think it's I don't think it's fair.
They're working. You mentioned the CBA, and behind the scenes, you know, they're still trying to ratify things for the go ahead to get all of the protocols in place for this year. But they're also at the same time trying to work out an extension of the CBA, which would be tremendous for the game. Because they're talking about something that could extend it all the way through, what is it, like 2025-26. But it seems like a lot that's going on behind the scenes, Mace, and you've been in this process before. I got my fingers crossed that they work it all out, but there's certainly a lot of issues there with escrow and, you know, how they're going to deal with the financial part of it the next few years as we come out of, hopefully, sooner than later, the pandemic here. But, man, there's a lot on their plates.
Yeah, there is a lot. And I was thinking that today, actually, because I was reading some of the things that I think it was Bob McKenzie or Pierre LeBrun put out there today that, you know, it looks like they're going to be barring any setbacks again. Looks like they're going to be, you know, back into the Olympics in 22 and 26, which
yeah,
I think
that's
is
another
awesome.
Facet of it.
Which is great. I know the players love it, and I know that you know, it just makes that tournament so special, and I'm really happy for that. But yeah, there's a lot of moving parts going on. This is unprecedented times, and you know, it's always tough. It's there's so many different things when players are tied to the escrow and to you know, a lot of owners' decisions and contracts signed, and it's all tied together, and they don't really, you know, have a choice in making those decisions. If, you know, you have an owner that's not doing a good job running their business and signing bad contracts, making bad TV deals, you, as a player, your livelihood and your contract is tied to it. And yes, you make a lot of money, but for a lot of guys, you know, the superstar guys, obviously they're going to have, you know, long, illustrious careers, barring, you know, any health injuries. But for the majority of guys, you know, it's, you're in there 1 or 2 years or 3 or 4 years if you're lucky. And that's the only earning potential that you have. So there's just a lot of different elements, and guys have to be careful. And the NHL, I'll give them a lot of credit. The salary cap to me was inevitable when it happened in my era. And I think it saved the game and made the game so much better because the parity of the league and the competition. I mean, now we look at it every year, Willie, and there's, I don't know how many teams that even don't make the playoffs that had a legit chance, in my opinion, to win the Stanley Cup. So I think everyone's really competitive. The turnaround for teams when they go through a rebuild doesn't take as long because of the salary cap now. And I think that's a good thing for the fan bases in those situations. And every team's going to have to go through it at some point. So I think from that standpoint and where the game's at, I think it's in a really healthy spot. And I think everybody's happy, players included. But there's always those little details that need to be worked out that they're not any fun for anybody to talk about. And I know fans hate it. I hated it when I was involved in it as a player. I hate it now, you know, as a fan and a broadcaster. But it's unfortunately, it's the business part of the game that, you know, nobody really likes to talk about. But it is really essential for both sides.
I think you hit on it, too. It's a really good thing that the league entered into this challenge with the virus as a very healthy group. It was a healthy league. So that's going to help them get through the hardships here that are coming. So with that in mind, Mace, you went through the free agency process a couple of times in your career. You referenced one of them that coincided with the with Avery coming into the world. But if you were a free agent going into this summer, it's a unique year, right? I mean, we're thinking of guys like for the Predators, like a Craig Smith or a Mikhail Granlund, and there's plenty of others too, you know, who won't get as many headlines, but they're looking to see if there's more opportunities out there. What would be going through your mind this year as opposed to other years? How would you try to process that? I would imagine you got to have a good relationship with your agent who can give you honest answers of what the market's going to look like.
Yeah, you're right, Willie. This is tough because, first of all, they've had more time to talk about it and look at all the other different scenarios, and guys have more of, I guess, a timeline to make that decision and to have those conversations. But the flip side of it is, if, you know, there's guys in certain situations where you have families and you have children, you know, we know who knows what's going to happen with school in the fall, but you have to look at those types of things. Then uprooting your family, and you don't know if you're going to, you know, hopefully if you sign with the team that you're with, it makes things a lot easier. But if you're going to become a free agent, you're going to have to, you know, talk to multiple different teams. Where are you going to live? Are you going to stay back home in your native country if you're European, or are you going to, you know, just stay where that you played? There's just a lot of different things as a player. It's really, I think, going to be tough for a lot of guys. For the teams, I don't think it really changes much because they just go about business as usual, and they, you know, they have the things and the rosters and the positions that they need to fill. I guess it doesn't really matter on the timeline when they get that done. But for a player, I think it changes things immensely, especially, you know, for the short term. And making all those life decisions, you know, when you have to, you know, move all your stuff, you put it in storage. There's just so many different things away from the actual hockey aspect of it. And you know, looking at rosters too, it's a lot. It's a different world in that regard, especially for this year. And because I don't think they're not going to start till December. Is that what it kind of
right? I mean, that's right now? As you mentioned, I hadn't even thought about that part of it, Mace. I was thinking about just the marketplace. You know, would you be willing to sign a 1-year deal when maybe you thought you were going to get 4 or 5? But you bring up a great one, and that is with this. If they can execute this, you know, this finish to the season, and the free agent period that normally would start today, right, where you would have time to plan for your family and say, okay, we can go in, we can find a place to live. We want to have the kids in school in the middle of August or September. Now, regardless, you'll be, if you change teams, you know, the school year, if you have kids, you know, that would be something to consider for sure, because you'd be coming in midstream, which is not as easy.
Yeah, it's not as easy, but you know what? It's most hockey players are very adaptable, and that's part of the lifestyle. You're used to moving, and you get traded in the middle of the season, and you have to do those types of things as well. It's not ideal, but yeah, it'll be very interesting too, because I would love to, you know, if you guys have David Poile on too, just to see his vantage point of how they're going to approach it. Because like you said, maybe it might be a situation where teams are coming out a little bit differently financially. Not sure what the salary cap situation is going to be moving forward, all those types of things, because obviously the revenue has gone down from the last part of this year and probably in playoffs. And who knows, hopefully by December, whenever the league gets going, they're back. We're all back to, you know, in quotation marks, normal life again, and we're able to fill the buildings and get the revenue that way, and get some nice TV deals for the NHL. But who knows? I don't know. I'm guessing that's going to have a major impact on what teams do and the length of contracts, and you know what guys are going to do, where they're willing to go. If it's a 1-year deal, I think it's going to take a little longer to decide what team you're going to go. If you're going to go for, you know, you're deciding between a couple 1-year deals, or you're deciding between a 1-year deal and a 4-year deal that's on the table for a player. That's really going to, you know, make a lot of tough decisions for guys coming out this year, and that's very possible. I'd love to hear what, you know, David Poile and some of the general managers have to say about their approach to free agency this year, because it's definitely going to be different.
Mace, good stuff as always. Carry on, and hopefully we're getting a day closer to seeing some hockey being played here very soon.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care, and hope to see you soon.
All right. That's Chris Mason joining us to talk hockey. He does every Wednesday at 1 o'clock here on the show. Stay tuned. will continue forward. We'll mix in a lot of pieces of news on all that has happened today. There's been plenty going on. TSSAA level. We've had hockey news today, as we just talked about. We'll cover some other things as well that we haven't gotten to. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more coming here on 102.5 The Game. Continuing forward here on Darren Donick and Chase, the news stories of the day. It looks like
that's
it's not
deep
official
cut
yet.
By Marquise.
Yes. It looks like Edmonton and Toronto will be the hub cities in the NHL. The TSSAA has proposed three scenarios for high school football of a compressed season that would start practice on August 30th, basically moving everything back a month, but then shortening the season to either a 7, 8, or 9-game regular season and a corresponding postseason that would go with it. If you played 7 games, you would have a longer postseason. The regular postseason wouldn't change. An 8-game regular season and a 16-team postseason, a 9-game regular season, and an 8-team bracket for the postseason at each classification. And in each case, teams that didn't make the playoffs could play a couple of extra games so that they had more of a closer replica of a regular season. In other words, in terms of the numbers of games. Nashville SC scheduled to go to Orlando today. They're pushing it back a day. They had a positive test, and so they will delay until tomorrow heading down to Orlando. Meanwhile, we'll just talk a little hockey with Chris Mason. The Predators are back on the ice today, practicing in workouts in the small groups leading up towards the actual beginning of training camp on July the 10th. It's so crazy to say that. Training camp starting on July 10th to resume the season, but progressing that way. In fact, the numbers look like they're pretty good. A lot of players have made it back and have been cleared to do the workouts at Bridgestone Arena. And speaking of that,
saw a tweet by Victor Arvidsson, too, that had his bag as he was headed to the arena.
All right. There you go. It's good. It's good to have that feeling there. So, Chase, we're going to get to the NBA part of this in just a moment. But what did you think of Mace's answer on the fact that if the Predators lose the first series against the Coyotes in the qualifying round, and this goes for every team, all those 8 teams would have a 12.5% chance of the first pick. He clearly didn't like it. You know, obviously it would be great for the Predators as a consolation prize if they were to lose as a fallback. It might soften the blow. But as a league, do you think that's the right thing for competitive balance?
It's a tough question. You're asking me to answer this question in a time where it's really hard to answer questions just because we're in unprecedented times. I can understand not liking it, though. If a team like he said, Pittsburgh or even Nashville, that is a contender and was going to be in the
playoffs.
Chicago
did it.
Chicago. Now, okay, so let me. I'll finish answering the question, and then I'm going to throw something at you that I brought up with Justin Bradford on Penalty Box Radio, or I keep saying that, on Preds Insiders the other night. So I don't think you're going to find a fair answer. You're just not. This is the best possible scenario they came up with because they knew that they didn't want to wait to do this draft lottery till all this stuff was done, because everything's going to be so compacted of trying to get a draft in and free agency and all of that in between seasons and not delaying things anymore going into next season. So this is the best that they could do with this. Is it fair? No, but it just is what it is. So if a team that really would have had no chance in a normal year ends up with him, with this guy, then you're just going to have to go, well, lucky them. This is their lucky year. This is something that you know, they ended up a good thing that ended up happening to them. Now, it's going to change. Like, let's say the Predators end up with the first overall pick. That's obviously going to rewrite any plans that David Poile had. I mean, that's going to change a lot of things. But let me play this what-if scenario for you. So let's say it is Chicago. Does Chicago actually, I mean, do they make the pick? Because you're going to get him on an entry-level deal, but we know the cap situation that they're in. Or do they take that and they dangle it out there and say, hey, we're willing to part with this, but you got to take one of these contracts off our hands too?
I think they would take the player. I think you just rarely get that opportunity. And remember, that particular player, even though he's super young and maybe he's a few years away from his peak, Lafreniere, he won't cost him much, right? He'll get a signing bonus and all that stuff, but his cap figure will be very low. So they'll still have their existing cap stuff, but with each passing year, they're getting closer and closer to getting out of the jail that they've been in the last couple of years, right? Corey Crawford's contract comes up. They put themselves in it to try to sustain, a mini dynasty, right? Yeah. So they're paying the price for that. So they've been wary of that. They're trying to get out of it. Sooner or later, they will. They feel like they've gotten, far enough along here. I don't think they would do that, to be honest with you.
Do you think any team would
cringing with the thought of them actually getting the first pick?
Do you think any team would dangle that pick out there to try and get more assets, or would they just take the pick and take?
You never know. It depends on how much they like this kid and how much others do. But I would be very surprised if there's a team that would trade an asset like that. It's a valuable asset, just the first pick. Unless you just think it's a weak year where, it's not a guy that, is a can't miss. And when I say can't miss, I'm not talking about necessarily a guy like Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby. But usually the first pick is a guy that's at least going to be a really good player for a long time. And you've got that asset for 10 years.
Well, almost, I have read that, right? he's in that category of, he's a slam dunk.
Yeah.
So.
He's going to be great. Like Nico Hischier, really, really good player. Is he Connor McDavid? No. So we're splitting hairs a little bit, but we're talking about impact guys who can help you right away.
Generational talents.
They're 18. Yeah, generational talents. All right, so Edmonton and Toronto are the cities. One thing that hasn't been publicized a whole lot is, what is the investment that the league has to make to create the environment in the bubble, right? And there's a story that came out in the NBA from Brian Windhorst about what the investment is in Orlando, what it's going to cost to create this this atmosphere where the guys can play.
Yeah, so he says in this article, this is the breakdown of it. 22 teams plus support staff at 3 resorts, 7 practice courts, 3 arenas, also providing meals, daily coronavirus testing and other medical support, security, transportation, and entertainment for more than 1,500 people during the height of the event. The price tag on this is more than $150 million that is coming out of the NBA pocket to pay for this. $150 million, and that's... think
that
about
that.
That
sounds about right, though. I don't think that jumps off the page at me. I might have guessed, I don't think I would have been shocked if that number ended up being even higher when it was all over.
Well, this blurb says, not included in this expense is the loss of revenue because teams won't be selling tickets. The league is projecting to lose more than $1 billion in revenue because of the coronavirus, sources said, even before considering the cost of finishing the season in Orlando. So they're going to lose $1 billion and then add $150 million to that to pay for this.
Right, and that's what they're faced with, right? That's why baseball owners were saying what they were saying, right? And the baseball players didn't want to hear it, but there is, whether you think they can stomach that or, swallow that or shoulder that load, that's a different thing. Like, this is the risk you take when you are an owner, right? That you're going to deal with the rises and falls in the economy and the health of your league and the health of your team. So you hope to get through it. But I think, it would make sense for the NBA. Listen, we're going to lose a lot
either way.
There's
a big reason that they're doing it.
But you've got to, you've got to do the best you can, because the price of not playing is even more than the price of going through this without even trying to play. So $150 million investment is going to be money well spent. I wonder how that compares with what the NHL is putting together right now.
Yeah.
Is theirs as extensive, as expensive in the two spots? Right, Edmonton and Toronto combined. I would imagine it's got to be a similar type of thing, right?
Well, Yeah, I would think so.
You got to feed everybody. You got to create the lodging, all of the transportation, all of these things,
right?
To try to mitigate
the risk.
You're
bringing 24 teams, not 22. So
right.
you're bringing two extra teams. But
I
wanted to say this too. So the reason that the NBA is doing this, this is how Windhorst closes it out, that if they don't play the 88 regular season games and four rounds of playoffs that are going to be covered, then the players would lose $600 million in salary, and the NBA teams themselves are protecting hundreds of millions from potential loss because of the television contracts. So it's all about TV and fulfilling the television contracts, and that's what the NHL's facing.
Sure,
that's what
everybody. If it weren't for the TV, I don't know that they would have. They might have just.
Oh, this would have been
season,
done a long
right?
time ago. Yeah,
yeah.
If that shows you how lucrative those television deals are for these sports, and as we have the NFL conversation, that one thing we had Greg Williams on last week when I was in for Jared, he said to Floyd and I, he goes, we're gonna play this year. It may not be on time. We're going to play, and I can give you a billion reasons why. And that's, yeah. I mean, that's why. I mean, you know, it's all about the revenue that comes in from the TV deals and, you know, even the potential of having some fans at some point if you're football. But to answer your original question with the NHL, I don't know, but I would imagine that it's around that, anywhere from maybe 100 to 150.
I would assume. I don't know for sure, but I do wonder, you know, because at times we've had some fun with it, right? Marquise has read off some of the things that are going on in there. It does seem a little extravagant at some point to try to create an environment where players are comfortable, safe, number one, but also have ways to entertain themselves through this process where they're separated from society.
Yeah, Stephen
right?
A. Smith
that
had
cost
some comments
might be worth
on that
it.
Yesterday.
Yeah. I don't know that the investment will be that big for the NHL. I'm sure it would be in the ballpark, but they may not go to the lengths that the NBA does. I don't know. That remains to be seen. How much do you want to invest in the comfort level, right?
Right. But, I mean, to an extent, you're going to have to do
something. There's basic needs, and then there's luxury.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to – because if you think about it, if you're a player and you're just basically you have three meals a day, you work out, you practice, you play games, and then you just have to sit in your room and read a book, you're going to get bored, and that's going to affect your play. It just is. We're human.
Right.
So you got to have something.
There's got to be a balance. You're right.
Yeah, you got to have something.
But do you need a movie theater, or do you need a dance club? Or, you know, some of the things that we were reading, it's like, do you really need that? Like, is that really going to make the difference in pulling this? I think they had to have those discussions, and they're going all in on that stuff.
Yeah, I think there are some things that you do. A movie theater isn't that much to ask, or a setup like that. I don't think that's a big deal.
Yeah, they have them down there anyway, I guess. But
so do something like that. You know, if you're in hotels and you got hotel bars, I mean, allow them to hang out at the bar and what have you. I mean, there are some. I was joking about Stephen A. Smith, but he does bring up some logistical things about, you know, if there's some single players and, you know, missing people.
Hey,
you know,
it's natural,
right? So you know, you want to prevent sneaking people in, but again, these are things that they're not really going to know until they get there and they figure it all out. So I understand that there's more than just playing games, and that's where the cost comes in.
Yeah. We got Nate on hold, wants to weigh in. Nate, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Y'all may have answered my question while I was talking to Marquise, but why do you think the NBA would be willing to risk $150 million? Because, I mean, it's not a guarantee that they're going to finish out the playoffs. So, you know, you could potentially go in, start playing, and maybe a week or two later have to scrub it. And isn't all that money just gone?
Yeah, but Nate, let me ask you this. Is $600 million more than 100? Well, he hung up. $600 million is more than $150 million. So the players were going to lose, if they don't come back, if they don't even attempt to come back, they could potentially lose more than $600 million in salary. That's reason enough right there.
Yeah.
And then the TV deal.
Yeah. You're doing everything you can to try to, you know, mitigate the risk and get the reward of capturing that revenue of the TV money and the players getting paid.
Yeah, because, right. Chase, you'll know this because, I mean, we watch wrestling. That's why wrestling ran live shows for the longest time, because they didn't want to affect their TV deals by recording shows. Because
right.
It's part of their deal that they got to do their shows live. So they started doing them live, and then now they're getting affected by it. But they did their shows, you know, live because they didn't want to affect the TV deal that they had with Fox. So that's the reason.
Right. And I totally get it. I mean, that's kind of what they have to do. They don't really have a choice. You have to try. And then if you try and it doesn't work, then okay. Then you move on. But they totally had to at least give it a shot, and we'll see if it all plays out.
All right, when we come back, we will have our final segment of the show. We'll hear from Reese Davis on Scott Van Pelt last night. By the way, Reese is going to join us. Is it tomorrow, guys, at high noon?
Yes.
So I got that right?
Yes, tomorrow.
So Reese Davis will join us, but we'll give you a little tidbit about something he said last night, which will be part of our discussion tomorrow, in terms of where college football is in the process right now, dealing with what we're all dealing with. Stay tuned. You're listening to 102.5 The Game. Coming down the home stretch of Darren Donick and Chase, another eventful show today. Lots of news. We'll recap it right at the end for you. Did want to mention, we haven't talked much college football today. Reese Davis will be on the show with us tomorrow. We're looking forward to chatting with him again at noon. And he was on Scott Van Pelt's SportsCenter last night, and he was talking about, you know, the obvious question facing college football. And you're hearing all these stories about cases rising all around the country in general, but how it's impacting college football, especially in some college football hotbeds like Texas and Florida. Here is what he said last night about the level of optimism from college football's leaders about whether there would be a season still.
Optimistic still, Scott, but a little bit more cautious maybe in the last few days than they were maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago when I talked to people. In fact, one person I've talked to in the past week referred to it as bruised optimism. Mm. And that's probably as good a way to put it as any. Someone else has sort of echoed what I've said. Things have changed so much over the last couple of months. And a friend in coaching said to me, it's a long way till September. So I think there's still a lot of optimism that the season will be played, but the rise in the number of cases has certainly dampened that enthusiasm a little bit. And everybody seems to be on the same page in terms of, and obviously everyone hopes and prays it doesn't happen, but someone becoming seriously ill, heaven forbid anything worse than that, certainly would change everything. But right now, most everyone I talk to say the overwhelming majority, if not all of their cases, thankfully, have been mild.
That's Reese Davis last night, and he brought up a point that, you know, I sent you guys an article last night that I was reading that, you know, is just straight to the point, right? And basically this was a doctor that he said, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. This was on CBS Sports, and I'll give you the gentleman's name. His name is Jacobson. Wait a minute, is that right? I got to pull it up here. But the point was this. He said, if enough people are playing, and we're talking about big guys, right, in football, and there's a lot of players on each team, just if you crunch the numbers, you are just inevitably, mathematically, going to have a certain amount of players that react adversely to the virus. It's going to happen. Some of those, a very small number of those players, but some would be hospitalized, and you might even have a couple of deaths. And he said that, he says, I'm not trying to be morbid or whatever. I just want to spell it out for you. And That does give you pause, right? Because you have thousands of players involved here, which is why you have seen some colleges already say, we're not playing. They're at lower levels, right? Division III in some cases. But they're just saying, it's not worth it. Let's just shut it down for a year. I think, obviously, the college football that we follow here is in a different boat. They're going to try everything they can to play. I think, by and large, the players are going to want to play. But I was curious to hear what Reese would have to say, and we'll talk it more in detail with him tomorrow about it. And I am wondering if the narrative will come back up, kind of like was discussed today on the high school level in Tennessee. Is there a scenario where you're going to have to think about playing in the spring?
Yeah, and I know that that has been on the table with a lot of people, that they've talked about that, of does that make the most sense? Is that going to be the safest course of action to play it in the spring or what have you? But it just goes into what we've been discussing of all the different parameters that you have to look at with this, the financial implications and the safety is first and foremost, how it affects the school as a whole, other sports is what I'm trying to say. So, I mean, those are all things that will come into play, and I look forward to talking to Reese about that.
The gentleman's name is Dr. Sheldon Jacobson. He was the one in that CBS Sports article I was talking about, just saying if you crunch the numbers and say there's 13,000 players competing, based on the research, you just do the math, there could be 3 to 7 deaths, just based on the percentages involved at the infection rate. But of course, those models change all the time. We've certainly over the last 3 months gotten a lot of models with a lot of different numbers, so it's hard to know. But it is definitely something you don't want to blow off. When it's definitely something you've got to factor in to all the decisions you made. And of course, at the college level, it's not like there's a players' union like there is on the pro level. These are 18 to 23 year old kids. And so this is another comment that Reese Davis had about the player's value and what's a reasonable and moral assumption of risk. So here's what he had to say.
These players have value, and they should be treated like every other student on campus in terms of the name, image, and likeness. Now, right. People are going to say, what in the world does name, image, and likeness have to do with COVID-19 and whether we're going to be able to play? And the point you brought up and the point that the UCLA players brought up in terms of wanting third-party independent oversight in terms of their well-being really underscore what those two things have to do with each other. Nobody's ever going to say that they are requiring them to come back. They're going to say, look, if you don't feel comfortable, sit out. But we both know that that's not reality. And I think where wisdom comes into this, Scott, is what is a reasonable and moral assumption of risk. We assume some risk in everything that we do in life. What's the right thing here?
An ongoing question, right? I think I saw some quotes from Greg Sankey. Yeah. He was talking to members of Congress today. Is that right? About the image and likeness question in this environment?
Yeah, and it certainly needs to come up. I mean, it certainly is a conversation that needs to be had, and we've had it for years on, should they get paid for that? Because these universities are making millions and millions. These conferences are making millions and millions on name, image, and likeness. But especially now in these times, I think that it's important. And that goes into the complications that there are more complications with college sports than there are with the pro sports, because – pro sports, you have unions and you have the player side and the owner side and they work it out. Well, there's no representation really with the player side in college sports. It's all the conferences or the NCAA. So it's finding that voice that those players have to be able to fight for their rights.
All right. As we wrap things up, just a quick recap of what has gone on today. In the NHL, TSN has reported that it will be, barring any last-minute changes, Edmonton and Toronto that will host the NHL games when they resume play. The Predators are back on the ice in small groups working out as the final tune-ups over the next week and a half or so towards the target date of July 10th to start the new training camp. And, of course, they haven't announced any schedule or dates of when game one against the Coyotes in theory would be. Let's hope those marks continue to stay on schedule. Nashville SC was scheduled to go to Orlando today. They pushed it back a day. They had a positive test as the MLS tries to get their group down to Orlando. And finally, the TSSAA proposing 3 different compressed schedules to the high school football board today, and they're not going to vote, but it would be either a 7, 8, or 9-game regular season. And if it's a 7-game regular season, you would have the full postseason. 8-game, you would take away the first round. 9-game, you would take away the first 2 rounds of the postseason. We'll see where that goes as they contemplate that. But it looks like the first time that you would see a college, or excuse me, a high school football game in Tennessee would be around September the 18th. Chase, good show today. We're back at it tomorrow.
Yep, we'll do it again.
Our thanks to Marquise Munson, and we'll be back with you tomorrow at 10 a.m. In the meantime, stay tuned for Jared and the GM coming up next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.